This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Waj. Hey, Waj, welcome back.
Hey, how's it going, Susan?
How's the minivan recording studio?
The minivan recording studio is very well air-conditioned. I'm sitting in my driveway, hidden from the view of my children. So it's blocked. The windows are blocked. So even if they peer out, they can't see me.
As long as they don't know you're there, you're fine.
They do not know I'm here right now. So right now we have a safe space.
Well, this week we have, as always, till the end of time, a lot going on. But I think this week, to start off with, I want to discuss the order from Judge Howell in the district court, or the district for D.C. Did you get a chance to read that much?
I didn't read the order, but I am completely aware of what you're talking about, and I'm really glad you're actually mentioning it, because I believe this week, as we're seeing more and more laughable and shameful obstructionism by the Republicans, people are kind of glancing over this order that came out last week.
Well, I don't know how many people are actually reading a federal court order for fun, but it is an interesting one. It has to do with a lawsuit brought by Democrats in the House trying to get access to certain grand jury materials from the Mueller investigation. Now, in most cases, grand jury materials are off limits to just about everyone. There's some limited cases where they can be accessible to, like, say, a defendant, where certain due process rights come into play. But for the most part, grand jury stuff is secret and will stay secret. And even the authorities cannot get at it. There's an exception, however, and that has to do with impeachment investigations. So Democrats sued to get access. DOJ blocked and said, nope, they can't have that for
what
various reasons. And Judge Beryl Howell's ruling was that, well, let's just read from it. She wrote, the DOJ claims that existing law bars disclosure to Congress of the grand jury information. DOJ is wrong. In carrying out the weighty constitutional duty of determining whether impeachment of the president is warranted, Congress need not redo the nearly 2 years of effort spent on the special counsel's investigation, nor risk being misled by witnesses who may have provided information to the grand jury and the special counsel that varies from what they tell HJC, House Judiciary Committee. As explained in more detail below, HJC's application for an order authorizing the release to HJC of certain grand jury materials related to the special counsel investigation is granted. Now, grand jury materials are one instance where whether or not the House is involved in an impeachment proceeding actually matters, because one of the authorizations for release of such grand jury materials has to do with if there's a judicial proceeding. And as the court ruled in this case, this impeachment proceeding is a judicial proceeding. Yes.
And a legitimate one. Legitimate one at that, which is a very important kind of a huge hole in the argument and conspiracy theories of Republicans who are saying that everything so far has been illegitimate and therefore should not be considered.
As we discussed previously, the argument that DOJ and Republicans are banking on is that because there was never a vote authorizing the beginning of impeachment proceeding or impeachment inquiry, this is not a real quote-unquote impeachment inquiry, and therefore the rules of impeachments don't apply. The court said, no, that's not how this works.
Nope.
And the court found that this DOJ's argument, it proves too much. It goes too far. And that if this argument was allowed to prevail, this would mean that the executive branch could be empowered to wall off any information, any crimes, any wrongdoing, just by having it in front of a grand jury. Now, it's also worth noting that in a separate suit, in a separate court involving the internal search for Trump's tax records, Trump's attorneys were asked by the judge how far their claim went that the president was immune to investigation and to prosecution. And the judge asked, well, what if Trump shoots a man on Fifth Avenue? What happens then?
And he can. The attorney said that the president of the United States of America, President Trump, is immune if he shoots someone, a civilian, on Fifth Avenue. And there's actually a recording of this exchange that I recommend everyone listen to, because you would think that Susan and I are just making this up. But nope, that actually happened.
Let's hear that now.
What's your view on the Fifth Avenue example? Local authorities couldn't investigate. They couldn't do anything about it.
I think once a president is removed from office, any local authority. This is not a permanent immunity.
Well, I'm talking about while in office.
No.
Nothing could be done. That's your position.
That is correct.
Yeah, I don't think the judge was too impressed with that argument. But that is the ultimate extent of what Trump is arguing. And, unfortunately, the DOJ, which is basically synonymous with Trump at this point.
That's also in line with Bill Barr's extremely expansive view of executive authority, and I would like to say an extremist interpretation.
Yeah, well, in the Howell case, some of what the White House has done so far may be coming back to bite them. For instance, the civil loan letter, the 9-page Trumpian rant about how this was not a real impeachment proceeding. On that, Judge Howell wrote, "The White House's stated policy of non-cooperation with the impeachment inquiry weighs heavily in favor of disclosure. Congress's need to access grand jury material relevant to the potential impeachable conduct by a president is heightened when the executive branch willfully obstructs channels for accessing other relevant evidence." It's not good when the, you know, impeachment hasn't really even swung into high gear yet, and already you have a judge ruling that the president's engaged in willfully obstructing channels.
They're stuck too, right? Because it's been a week since the Republicans stormed Skiff with their cell phones.
Oh God, that happened this week.
Oh, that was that this week or last week?
I don't even remember. It was not too long ago. It was.
It was last week. And remember, the argument the whole time was, we want everything to be public. We want full disclosure, even though the Republicans who stormed actually are part of the committee and had access to the hearings. And actually, Republicans were sitting there and actually listening to these depositions. And the reason why you didn't hear any leaks by Republicans is because the information that allegedly came out was so damning. And also, I'm so glad you mentioned that exchange between the judge and Trump's lawyer when Trump's attorney said that he could literally shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and be immune. Around that same day, the former attorney general, shout out to Matthew Whitaker, who leapfrogged above everyone else.
Acting attorney general. We're not going to give him the full title.
The acting attorney general who leapfrogged above everyone else because he auditioned for the role on CNN. He also said that the president that abusing power was not illegal. So that also happened there. Just to give you an extent, if you're listening, to how far Republican enablers are willing to go to protect Donald Trump.
Well, going back to Congress's or the Republicans' raid on the SCIF this week, it was how many were involved? Quite a few. Republicans basically interrupted an ongoing deposition that was being conducted in the secure facility where, I mean, number one rule of SCIF is don't bring your damn cell phone in there. But the Republicans stormed in with cell phones in hand. And then they were like tweeting from there. And then they were like, oh, we're not tweeting from the place where you can never have a cell phone. We're messaging staff who are tweeting out these things that we're writing. But how are you conveying this information to your staff?
Matt Gaetz said that it was a staffer who did it. Once they're so incompetent. That's what's so beautiful.
Well, Gaetz certainly is.
Once they were informed that it's actually illegal to bring in a cell phone to a secured facility, then they're like, oh, it wasn't me, it was a staffer who did it. And then the funny thing was is that they got hungry after like 2 hours and they ordered pizza. So if you're relying on these people to have a hunger strike for your cause, good luck.
Man, I relate to that. I would be really, really, I would probably give up on any kind of demonstration to get pizza. So just letting you know in advance. Don't call me for that.
Look, they can't defend the facts. The facts have Trump and his accomplices dead to rights. They got him. And so they're going to attack the process. And the process now is actually working against them from both sides, right? Because if you want more transparency and accountability, and now you want the public to have access to these depositions, guess what? That ain't good for Trump. So what are they going to do next? That's the question.
Yeah.
From every angle, they're screwed.
The Gaetz and Company's little stunt is definitely making Congress 1850s again.
You think that's when America was apparently great.
Well, it's definitely a time when use of force and violence to get things done in Congress was certainly widespread and notorious. I mean, obviously, they're not going that far. I mean, there was actual violence and canings and whatnot. But this is an example of how breakdown in political processes has led to its use of force. They stormed the SCIF. They walked in a place they were not permitted to be, not allowed to be under the rule. Well, some of them actually were allowed to be there, which is the funnier part. They are part of a raid to a place that they were totally allowed to walk in whenever they wanted to. But it's definitely an escalation of their willingness to go outside the rule of law and normal congressional procedure to get their way or to impede this investigation continuing. My favorite part of traveling, for work especially, is when you go to a hotel and they have a nice, comfy, quiet bed with cool, crisp sheets, and it's lovely, and it's there, and it's just like, why can't we have this all the time? Why can't we just sleep in a bed that's as comfortable when I'm not on the road?
And that aren't filthy.
Well, that too.
So, thankfully, you actually have Brooklinen, which was created by a husband and wife team to give you that luxurious hotel feel in your own home.
Yeah, the answer is not to travel all the time or stay on the road your whole life. It's to get good, comfortable, crisp, cool sheets for your own bed, in your own bedroom. And that's where Brooklinen comes in.
And Brooklinen has actually been awarded by Good Housekeeping as, Susan, the best of online bedding. And as a person who values his sleep, which he rarely gets because he has 1,400 babies, I can tell you
more
that...
or less.
Yeah, more or less, give or take 1,300. Having cool, crisp, clean, comfortable linen can give you the type of sleep, if you're an exhausted dad, that can really refresh you, restore you. And so if you want this type of sleep, Susan, I recommend you shop at brooklinen.com.
My Brooklinen sheets are the most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on, and their towels have turned my bathroom into a spa. I could not recommend them more for friends, family, or treating yourself to the upgrade that you deserve. Brooklinen.com is also giving an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Get 10% off and free shipping when you use the promo code 45th at brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 10% off and free shipping is to use promo code 45th at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com, promo code 45th. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. So anyway, the Judge Howell order, that is not a final ruling, of course. That will be appealed. But right now, the parties, or DOJ, is seeking a stay from the D.C. Circuit Court, the court above that. And that ruling has not been issued yet. But there was an interesting tidbit from the House Democrats' filings. They noted in a footnote that, quote, although DOJ again argues, based solely on Washington Post article, that the Judiciary Committee's inquiry into these issues is secondary to HPSCI's Ukraine inquiry, that contention lacks merit for the reasons stated above. In other words, they're saying, House now saying, that actually this impeachment inquiry, it's not going to be all Ukraine all the time. It's not going to be a narrow, focused, targeted impeachment inquiry. Everything is on the table, potentially, especially the Mueller investigation.
Which I don't know why the Democrats like just let die, because just to remind the listeners,
because that's how they are. That's who they are.
I mean, I know. I know. They bring a calculator to a knife fight. That's the Democrats, and they end up punching themselves in the face. But I mean, just a quick reminder that Mueller report is really damning to the Trump administration. It's in two parts, and in one of the parts, he outlines several instances of obstruction of justice, which is a felony, by the way. And in the other part, it details the continued ongoing attack on our democracy by Russia and the 2016 interference, which was done to help Donald Trump. It did not exonerate Donald Trump, contrary to what Donald Trump has said and what Bill Barr said in his magical three-page summary that was released 2 days after the report dropped. Just a quick refresher for the listeners.
So with the Howell ruling, we have an official court order rejecting the DOJ slash Republican slash it's the same thing position of this is not a real impeachment inquiry. So, of course, what do the Democrats do after receiving this ruling that affirms their position? They announce they're going to hold a vote on the impeachment inquiry. because, of course, they do.
Yeah, but you know what? She has the votes. Pelosi counted the votes, and she has it. And she probably did yes as a response.
She's always had the votes, probably. But the issue is, well, here's what happened. So she issued a letter announcing their intent to hold this vote on procedures and how going forward the impeachment inquiry would be done. They've now today, Tuesday, released the text of this rule that they're going to vote on. And it does emphasize this is a continuation of the existing inquiry. But it would, in effect, give Republicans what they've been demanding, which is a vote by the whole House on whether to conduct an impeachment inquiry. And in the proposed text of the new rule, most of it actually is already in existing House rules. There's not a ton there that's new or novel. So again, why even do this? But one of the interesting parts they have is that it does give a lot of power to the Intel Committee and to the new nemesis de jure, Schiff, who is the new face of the Democratic Party, because apparently Trump has got tired of calling AOC plus three the face of the Democratic Party. But it would give Schiff, who's the chairman of the Intel Committee, a lot of power going forward. And significantly, it would allow for questioning of witnesses in a format that begins with 90 minutes, so 45 minutes for each side, Democrat and Republican, to question witnesses before they open up for the usual five-minute round of questioning. And that first opening 90 minutes, 45 minutes each side, would be only for either the chairman or ranking member, which is either Schiff or Nunes, or a staffer who is hopefully, presumably, a lawyer able to question effectively. And it does have procedures for how the GOP can suggest subpoenas or witnesses to bring in, but they must explain why these subpoenas should be issued or why these witnesses should be brought in. So, Waj, what do you think? Did the Republicans react to this official declaration of an open vote on impeachment inquiry by showing their relief or appreciation or gratitude to the Democrats for finally making their inquiry constitutional and telling them, yes, we're so glad you finally agreed to do this. And sure, we may not agree with your objectives, but at least now you are acting permissibly under the Constitution. Is that what happened?
Nope. They kicked the goalpost. They kicked the goalpost because it's not about the process. It's not about the facts. It's not about the procedure. It's not about the institutions. It's not about the rule of law. It's not about getting to the truth. It's about protecting Trump at all costs. And because they are so self-destructive and they've committed so many self-owns, because, like I've said, the facts are so damning to Trump, now that Pelosi says, okay, we'll give you the vote. Here's the vote. This is what you wanted. Now they're like, wait. Whoa. This is still a sham. How dare you? You shifty shift, which, by the way, is an anti-Semitic slur, which is now mainstream, like so many anti-Semitic slurs are, thanks to Donald Trump and the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, let's see how McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House, what he had to say. Let's hear what McCarthy had to say about all this.
No, I applaud the speaker for finally admitting it is a whole entire sham, but you can't put the genie back in the bottle. A due process starts at the beginning. It doesn't affirm a mis-sham investigation all the way through. If you were in a legal term, it'd be the fruit from the poisonous tree. It'd be a mistrial. None of this information would go forward.
Yeah, it's kind of like you took a really bad early AI and like fed it a bunch of legal terms and then had it spit out something that was supposed to be semi-coherent. But I really think even like early AI would have been better than McCarthy was here.
Due process starts at beginning, does not affirm sham investigation. Yeah, it's they're stuck. They just they're just completely stuck. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
And then I would like a due process, please. What due process?
Give me a due process at beginning. The funny thing here is what Pelosi's going to get is basically votes on the record. And this is going to help the Democrats in 2020 because she can literally just go down the line and say, this is the people that voted for it. This is the people didn't vote for it. And also, secondly, strategically, what it will do is it will let this information be public. And we still don't know, right, what Fiona Hill like said. We still don't know the full extent of Ambassador Taylor's testimony. And what, you know, last week it was the Pentagon official, Laura Cooper, who went and said what we assume is damning testimony. But so far, what we've kind of ascertained from some of the leaks is that all of it is damning and all of it corroborates to what was in the whistleblower complaint, which what was in the phone call transcript, which what was in Ambassador Taylor's opening statement. So all of this, Susan, is really bad for the Republicans. So I'm just really curious what their next step is going to be. Because I just don't, like, what are they going to do? I think they're just going to attack the messengers. What else is left?
I think they'll continue their pattern of attacking the process. Although they've given some signals of where they're occasional brief attempts at arguing substance are going to go. Here's McCarthy on why none of this this inquiry is directed at anything that's concerning to him.
I thank him for his service. I think his commitment to this country, but he is wrong in this. We have differences of opinion, but more importantly, we have a rule of law. The entire country, the entire world has the transcripts. No one questions, was that the phone call? Even if you ask the American public from poll, even if you ask scholars, nothing in that phone call is impeachable. The president has a right. It was an open case. It wasn't about something in the future. It's something that transpired. All of America wants to know why we had to go through the Russian hoax.
Yeah, to the extent that there were words that form sentences in there, McCarthy's position is that there was nothing in the call that's even worthy of concern, so therefore case closed. By the way, there was an article came out not too long ago today about scholars who were asked about this, like McCarthy suggested, and no, they did not agree with McCarthy's interpretation of what is okay and not okay for a president to do.
And we forget, like, this guy, Donald Trump, admitted it, like, looking at the camera. So did Rudy Giuliani. So did Mick Mulvaney. Remember Mick Mulvaney in his press conference? It seems like a month ago, but last week, I believe he said, you know, everyone does it, quid pro quo, quote, get over it. So you have admissions and the transcript and the testimonies and the text exchange between Taylor and Sondland. And now Sondland is going back and saying, wait a second. Let me go back and correct some of my testimony, because it seems that the EU ambassador who got that job with a $1 million donation to Donald Trump might have committed perjury, Susan Simpson.
Yes, I believe he's still top of my rankings of person in the administration most likely to get indicted.
Top three.
The Republicans' complaints this whole time have been about process and how it's unfair to Republicans. Republicans don't get a voice. Republicans aren't represented. They don't have a chance to participate in these closed-door, secretive, Soviet-style hearings, as someone called it today. But the thing is, all of these committees, the three committees involved in this process so far, they have Republicans on them, like every other committee does. And they are more than welcome to participate in these hearings. However, not all of them have chosen to do so. For instance, Representative Ted Yoho appeared on CNN today on Poppy Harlow's show, and she asked him about, I mean, she was like, well, I'm glad you're here, but why are you here and not attending the deposition today? It's going on in the Hill. Or, in fact, why have you not attended any of the depositions that have occurred to date?
Okay, and this will be the first one that you attend in the inquiry.
It'll be the first one, but we've been very engaged in what's going on in this whole vote that Ms. Pelosi's bringing up, and I'm glad she's bringing it up. But it's not an official impeachment inquiry. It's a vote to okay the process that they're going through and the transparency. And as long as we're talking about transparency, these are held in an intelligence briefing skiff, some of them. A lot of that information was leaked, and that goes against to USC Code 386, that members or staff members are allowing information to be released from an intelligence briefing, and that needs to be investigated because they're going and leaking stuff that they shouldn't be leaking.
All members of the committees, so you're one of them, are allowed to read the transcripts of these depositions as they've been happening.
Right.
Have you done that?
We've read the summary of Volcker's, and there was one other one we did.
The summary, or you've gone actually to read the full
just transcripts? The summary of them, the summaries of them. And
why?
Going back to,
I get again, you're an important member of an important committee, and this is an important inquiry. And I'm just confused as to why it seems like you don't think it's been worth the time until today to go or to read them.
Well, I said, because it's not an official inquiry. It is something they have moved with.
Yeah, so Yoho's, his rationale is he's not attending these depositions because it's not a real inquiry anyway. But moreover, it would not be a real inquiry even if a vote was held on it, because that wouldn't be an official inquiry, impeachment inquiry vote. It would be just a vote on how the process of the impeachment inquiry should be done.
Yeah, wow, you kind of have to admire the shamelessness, you know, like with a straight face to go on television and say that and have that, you know, be your legacy. It's very impressive.
Yeah,
I would cringe. Like, I really admire people who are able to do this without any shame. Like, I think you and me, like, our faces would, like, twitch. We'd start sweating. We'd probably bust out into hives. Robbie is also not a really good liar. like there'd be like we twitch, it'd be just be awkward. We do that weird like side glance that Paul Manafort did. Remember when they were asking about his relationship with Russia and Ukraine? But like this guy just straight up looks at the camera and said what he just said. That's very impressive. I applaud Representative Yoho. I applaud.
Yeah, and others like Mark Meadows are able to just tweet it out. Or their staff is able to do it for him. But Mark Meadows tweeted today, "We have just learned House Democrats are moving the public impeachment hearings to the Intelligence Committee, taking it out of the normal jurisdiction, the Judiciary Committee, cutting out GOP members who have spent the majority of time questioning witnesses till now. This is a sham." Again, there's no process improvement or change or alteration that could possibly suit the Republicans because they want to be able to complain about process. That's all they got. But also, to be fair, there are definitely politics behind this new move to empower the, Schiff and the Intelligence Committee. And it's a pretty effective move. For instance, of all the House committees, which one do you think has the fewest Republicans?
Intel.
Yep. It's got 9. And of those 9, 2 of them are Representatives Hurd and Turner, who are at least moderately squishy on the whole impeachment Ukraine issue. And also, most of the biggest goofballs in Congress aren't on the Intel Committee. So Trump's usual shameless defenders, Meadows, Jordan, McCarthy, Gates, will not be there. However, there's at least one goofball left who will be present, and that's the ranking member, Nunes. Or Nunes.
Nunes
with a Z, as Trump tweeted today.
Oh, he did that? I missed it.
Of course. He's like, go read Nunes's book with a Z. I'm like, oh, I bet he feels so appreciated today.
And then also Rudy Giuliani misspelled Bin Laden as Ben Laden.
Yeah. Oh, good old Benjamin Laden.
Yeah. Apparently Obama killed this poor man named Benjamin Laden. Why? Why did he kill Benjamin Laden? Alas, one day we will find out.
Once upon a time, my bra drawer wasn't in a great situation. I mean, I had bras there waiting for me. The problem was I hated almost all of them. I had like one or two favorite bras, and it got to a point where that's all I wanted to wear because the rest of them sucked, so I had to do laundry all the time. And then finally, I realized that you don't have to go through life hating almost every bra in your drawer. There's a solution, and the solution is Third Love. Third Love is the comfiest and most convenient bra company that has ever existed. And with Third Love, every bra in your drawer can be your favorite bra, because they have the Fit Finder quiz. Just answer a few simple questions to find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. Over 14 million women have taken the quiz to date. It's actually fun and takes less than a minute to complete. And did you know that breast shape matters when finding a good fit? It's not just about cup size and band size. And that's probably why you've got those bras in your drawer that are technically the right size and yet you still hate wearing. Third Love bras are hands down the most comfortable bras you'll ever own. My favorite is the 24/7 Pima Cotton t-shirt bra because it is extremely comfortable. Promise. And all of their bras have lightweight, super thin memory foam cups that mold your shape. Third Love knows that there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now, they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Just go to thirdlove.com/45th now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first order. That's thirdlove.com/45th. For 15% off today. Looks like we just had a statement from the press secretary get released. The resolution put forward by Pelosi confirms that House Democrats' impeachment has been an illegitimate sham from the start, as it lacked any proper authorization by a House vote. It continues a scam by allowing Chairman Schiff, who repeatedly lies to the American people, to hold a new round of hearings, still without any due process for the president. The White House is barred from participating at all until after Chairman Schiff conducts two rounds of one-sided hearings to generate a biased report for the Judiciary Committee. Even then, the White House's rights remain undefined, unclear, and uncertain because those rules still haven't been written. So yeah, obviously they're not pleased yet. But Lindsey Graham did declare victory today in a tweet saying, "Very much appreciate my Senate GOP colleagues signing on to my resolution condemning the House Dem process against the president. Our efforts forced Speaker Pelosi and Dem leaders to retreat from unfair and underhanded process."
Yeah, that's Stephanie Grisham, first and foremost. May we all get jobs like hers, gets a six-figure salary as the press secretary, has yet to hold a White House press briefing. So now we have, like you said, they're attacking the process. nothing's going to be good enough. But the public opinion, Susan, is actually tilting towards impeachment and removal, not just impeachment, but also removal. Now we have more than 50% of America, like 51%, that is actually for this. And as more and more of these testimonies come out and more of this becomes public, it's I think it's going to go up to 60% by end of November. I could be wrong, but I mean, to get 51% already, and we still haven't had the quote-unquote formal vote in the impeachment inquiry. Just to give an analogy, at the beginning of the Watergate hearings, it was at 19%. And 13 months later, after the secret evidence came out, it was at 57%. We're already at 51%. They're going to drown. They don't got nothing except attack the process.
So this procedural vote on the processes to be used for the impeachment inquiry, good move or bad move for the Democrats?
I think ultimately a good move for two reasons. Number one, you got the votes. She wouldn't have done it unless she has the votes. It puts everyone on record. It puts everyone on blast leading up to 2020. And I think you're going to be able to use it in ads for the people who supported it and the people who didn't. Secondly, because it's gone public, I think they know what goods they already have. And they can recall the witnesses who have already come and then do a public hearing. And they could also release these transcripts of the deposition. Just leak it out. Leak it out. Drip, drip, drip for the next 2-3 weeks. All of it is damning to not just Trump. I know I made a mistake here. We always keep mentioning Trump, but we would be remiss not to mention that Pence, Pompeo, Mulvaney, I think even Perry, all these guys are in a lot of trouble, Susan.
Perry will dodge us just fine. I'm not worried about him.
But they're not, it's not just Trump. Like, Pence is going to be in a lot of trouble. So is Pompeo and also Giuliani, that's a given. And Mulvaney. So I'm really curious how these guys strategize. And I still think ultimately they're going to betray Trump and vice versa. That's my prediction.
I mean, there's a non-zero chance that the Senate would vote to remove him. But I don't think those on that list, other than possibly Perry, are going to turn code on him anytime soon. And yeah, there are arguments that like this does give political benefits to Democrats and it divides the GOP and it takes away a GOP talking point. And it does possibly settle turf disputes over which committee is going to have power here and does give a politically favorable home forum for this impeachment inquiry. And for me, here's the one thing I do actually buy, like the one vote in favor of this process vote that I am okay with, or that I think is actually a good argument, is that it gets rid of the goddamn 5-minute rounds of questioning that would destroy this republic if they let it go on. Usually in these hearings, it's all a chance for, you know, representatives to use their 5 minutes of fame to seize the limelight, get on TV, get some clips recorded. And it means that questioning is ineffective, boring, and just listless and just goes in circles all the time. So in order to avoid this problem and to do what we saw, for instance, with other recent hearings, like with Lewandowski, the new rules are that, again, before the hearing, for the 5-minute rounds and all the representatives get their, you know, time to shine, there'll be the 45 minutes of questioning for each side from a designated source so that progress can actually be made. So that, to me, is a legit argument. However, on balance, there are other ways they could have gotten rid of the 5-minute voting as being when we're doing it. I think this is a bad move because, like, well, one, GOP is just going to get new talking points. This ain't going to shut down any talking points they got. It won't make any practical difference in how Republicans are, you know, responding to the impeachment inquiry. And that's a cave to Republicans. Plus, and here's the biggest negative, it plays right into the GOP's hands by refocusing on the process and not the substance. Like today, when we have critical testimony going on in the Hill, Dem leaders are out briefing reporters on the impeachment resolution. Instead of like focusing on actual substance of stuff that's going on, messaging's all over the place and all about this vote and the impeachment inquiry process. And that's exactly what the GOP wants. Because it turns out, whenever they're forced to give an answer on substance, it doesn't go so great.
No, I don't necessarily disagree with you. On the flip side, because Trump and the Republicans have been so self-destructive, and because the facts and the evidence so far are so damning, and, you know, it's like a building block, they just keep corroborating and, you know, it's like a scaffolding approach, right? It's just building and building and building. And because Trump is so unpopular, I don't think that the GOP is going to get too much mileage out of it. I'll give you one example. what happened over the weekend? Huge news that should be dominating all the headlines. El-Baghdadi's dead. No one's talking about it. It's Tuesday, and we're back on impeachment. And so what I'm trying to say is I understand everything you said I agree with. I still believe that because it's been so damning and because all they're attacking is the process, and most Americans just don't even care about the process, to be honest. They don't get this stuff. It's all confusing.
They do care, though. That's the problem. A lot of them hear this and they focus on this, and it's a very effective tactic for people who are just following along and slowly absorbing the inquiry through, you know, bits and pieces and occasional 5 minutes of news here and there. These arguments are very persuasive. I've seen it myself. Like, people think they sound plot. They're like, wait, why wouldn't you give due process? Why wouldn't you give a forum for everyone to be heard?
But the facts are already out. See, what that's... So you
but they're not. The number of people who know the facts is very small. We're like in the, you know, top like 2% probably. And Wilson, this podcast is like top 2% of people who know about what's happening in
you
the Ukraine.
You guys are elitists. Welcome, you elitists.
Everyone listening to this podcast is an elitist in terms of knowledge of the impeachment proceedings so far.
No, but it's about narrative, right? It's about story. And the story that's being built slowly but surely for the last 3 years is that Trump is corrupt and abuses his power and has lied. And something about foreign interference is bad. And he's attacking Biden, and Biden's still very popular. And so the Democrats have the edge on the story, which is rare because Republicans are always the masters at messaging. And one thing I'll tell you is the last month, they literally have tried to, you know, they've tried everything, every conspiracy theory, every spin. Nothing has really stuck, nothing. I mean, we just started with that example of the SCIF attack. Let's call it the SCIF attack because it sounds much more cinematic. Even that didn't stick. So that's why I have a measure of optimism, even though I share your concerns.
Yeah, well, here's what happens when Republicans are forced to try and deal with the substance of these issues. For instance, here's what happened when Representative Mark Emaday was interviewed by Manny Raju.
Mr. Emaday, though, the substance of the things that have come out is that the president asked for a public investigation into his rivals, and also Ukraine aid was being withheld. And well, Bill Taylor testified. That's not my conclusion. I'm saying that's what's come out in all, everything that's
come
out.
Sounds like a conclusion to me, so we disagree on the question.
The president has asked for the Ukrainians to investigate the Bidens. Is that okay?
The president has asked for the whistleblower complaint to go through the normal processes, and we've seen nothing of that. So beyond that, when you say that you've made the conclusion or whatever, it's like you're a gifted guy, because guess what? It isn't over, and you already know what you think.
The rough transcript, the White House transcript that was released said, had President Trump asking President Zelensky to open an investigation to the Biden.
Do you know if they've even got plans to call the whistleblower? Because I heard they didn't. Now, I don't know if
but
that's
true. You're
not
answering my question about the substance of the allegation.
I disagree with your conclusion. It's a conclusion, not a question.
I'm asking you about what's in the White House transcript.
My English teacher says you've got a conclusion. So if you want to interview yourself, go right ahead. You're interviewing me.
Why don't you want to answer the question about it? Is it okay for the president to ask a foreign country to investigate the Biden?
Why don't you do an interview instead of interviewing yourself?
The president asked on the White House lawn.
Can you answer my question?
On the South lawn of the White House, the president asked China to investigate the Bidens. Is that okay?
You know what? If you don't want to interview me, then interview yourself.
I'm asking you a question. If you don't want to answer,
I don't understand.
Is there pressure?
You don't understand?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for doing the best you could.
Yeah, this it kind of reminds me of Pence's questioning when he was over in, I think, Warsaw. His answer to a question about Biden and the investigation was like, well, that's your question. And the reporter's like, yeah, that is my question. That's why I asked it.
It's better than Mike Pompeo. Just slowly simmering with rage as he is confronted with some actual journalists who have done some work and ask him follow-up questions. Remember that?
Look, why can't reporters just ask him about relevant, timely, critical topics relevant to his tenure as Secretary of State, like how the workforce in Kansas is doing?
Yeah, like, come on now. Ask him about the rapture. That's what I would do. I would ask him about like Christianity and the rapture just to like warm him up. And then he'd think, oh, I'm getting into my group. And then just like, boom, undercut him. Some actual questions about substance and, you know.
I think he's more upset about why no one wants to talk to him about what he can do for Kansas citizens as Secretary of State as he prepares for his escape hatch Senate run. But speaking of Pence, here is what happens when he is forced to try and grapple with questions of substance about what's going on with Trump's request to Ukraine and also China.
Did you think that it was appropriate for the president of the United States to bring up a political rival?
Well, I think the president's made clear that his discussion in that matter was all about looking to the past. But and I can tell you that in the president's call the American people take time to actually read the call, which I know was greatly distorted by the way it was characterized.
But what did
in
you
the
think?
Whistleblower's report? The whistleblower spoke about 8 different references to
but it's
the
not
Bidens.
Just the whistleblower, simply, Mr. Vice President.
And, but the other thing, the other distortion, Judy, frankly, was when the chairman of the Intelligence Committee read into the record before the committee a fabricated version of the phone call.
Now, you can see in there that just Pence just refuses to answer the question. He just dodges and ducks and jives. And he's pretty good at that compared to some. But he makes one comment here that's really interesting because it echoes something that we heard earlier on this episode from McCarthy. And also we heard a couple episodes ago from Mulvaney. And that's about how this is all okay because Trump is investigating the past. And this is like obviously a circulating talking point where Republicans are trying to draw a line and say it's okay. What Trump is doing is fine because it's looking to the past and not the future. And that's what Mulvaney was distinguishing on when he said, oh, it's totally fine for a quid pro quo to be based on looking at the 2016 election.
Everyone does it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, looking into past elections, fine. Future ones, not fine. So what's going on here? I think this is their strategy for differentiating the GOP investigation, what's going on with Trump's request to Ukraine, from the wrongdoing that they claim to be investigating in the first place. So it's okay for Trump to investigate political rivals for what they did in 2016, because that's a past election. But it was not okay for the government or Democrats or anyone to investigate what Trump was doing in the 2016 election during the 2016 election, because that was looking to the future.
It's all bad faith. That's look. That's the recurring theme here.
Yeah.
It's always going to be bad faith. They don't care. They will always change the rules. They'll change the guidelines. They'll cheat. I mean, you know, two words: Merrick Garland. Okay, that's going to be the present future of the Republican Party. That's it. And so I'm going to go a step further and say, like, once they attack the procedure, and if they lose, which I think they will, and the process, they're going to attack the institutions. And they're going to attack the messengers. That's the inevitable consequence, is that the institutions themselves will be attacked. Just like, you know, Trump and Republicans now attack the deep state. Susan Simpson, the same deep state that helped us kill Baghdadi, is now an instrument against Donald Trump.
Yeah, even more concerning for me about this division between investigating past elections and investigating future elections is they're setting up a scenario where they can gain political points, they can get advantage in the upcoming election by investigating the 2016 election, while also maintaining the idea that it is wrong and appropriate, illegal, a crime to investigate what Trump is doing in the 2020 election.
Yeah, which is, that's right, that's right. And all of this is set up for the 2020 election. Ukraine being asked to investigate Joe Biden, or the congressionally approved $400 million that they need will be withheld. And always, I just want to remind people, you know, Ukrainian citizens have like died, like 11,000 civilians have died as a result of Russia's invasion. I don't think Americans realize like Russia invaded Ukraine. It's like war. Yeah, people are dying.
You know, it is a war. That's ongoing.
And people are dying. And that's why they needed that the $400 million. It was for the national security of Ukraine, which Donald Trump and his cronies held up just so they could extort Zelensky to attack Biden. So many crimes. It's like at least 4 crimes there, right? Foreign interference, extortion, conspiracy to extort, obstruction of justice. Did I miss any?
I mean, I'm sure there's some FARA violations and some good old bribery thrown in there here and there.
Good old bribery. Sorry. Yeah, of course, the bribery. And then, and meanwhile, we have Bill Barr. Like, I just love this. Like, this should be like leading news, but because there's so much chaos, we kind of forget that our taxpayer dollars are funding Attorney General Bill Barr's wild escapades all around the world, trying to find evidence of this debunked CrowdStrike Ukraine conspiracy theory that, like, apparently was like the Democrats in Ukraine that interfered in the 2016 election and not Russians. And I think it was last week where the Italian prime minister in the New York Times said that, yeah, we don't entertain such conspiracy theories. And by the way, yes, William Barr did go to Italy to allegedly get this type of information. That's also happening.
I would absolutely watch a sitcom based on the Attorney General traveling around the world chasing a Papadopoulos conspiracy theory.
It's would it be a satire? Like a drama? Would it be a suspense?
Like, it'd be like the modern day Veep. Because yeah, Veep got too realistic. We need one that's a little more absurd. So all of this aside, I don't think this whole procedural inquiry vote is a great idea. But my bigger concern is the precedent we're setting. Because what Democrats are doing here is they're setting a precedent. They're greenlighting any president in the future who wants to stonewall Congress on basically any topic until and if Congress holds a formal vote initiating impeachment proceedings. This is going to be an awful precedent to deal with because, again, most of what's being done right now, you don't need impeachment powers to do that. Grand jury stuff, yeah, that's impeachment powers. Questioning witnesses about how OMB is operating and how our foreign affairs being conducted, that's oversight. You don't need to have an impeachment inquiry for this to happen. So this is saying, okay, President, you don't have to give us information on anything going on in your administration unless we're impeaching you. So it would almost neutralize, if taken down farther this path, Congress's oversight role and turn them into basically sitting their lapdogs until impeachments begin.
More leaks. It's going to be more leaks then. More patriots are going to step up. I'm not talking about a football team. I'm talking about actual people who care about the rule of law in this country. That's my hope. I could be wrong.
Well, and then today, on top of all of that, we had Senator Schumer make an interesting statement. I'm still not sure entirely what to think about. Of course, amid all of this, the government is still going on. There are still things that have to be done. For instance, the budget. And here's what Schumer had to say today.
As for the government's funding, look, I believe left to our own devices, Congress could work out an agreement to quickly fund the government. But I'm increasingly worried that President Trump may want to shut down the government again because of impeachment, an impeachment inquiry. He always likes to create diversions. I hope and pray he won't want to cause another government shutdown because it might be a diversion away from impeachment. It's very worrisome to me.
So yeah, what do you think, Waj? Is this a real threat from Trump?
Yes. I think so.
Or is this just something preemptive on Schumer's part? Because I have not seen anything that's indicated the White House has staked a position here or suggested it would do this. This is the first I've heard coming in a concrete form that this is a possibility being raised.
I think Schumer understands how Trump's mind finally works. I think people are taking him literally and seriously, and they're realizing he's not going to be presidential. I think there's also memories of the fact that Donald Trump shut down the government. Remember that? For a record number of days, more than a month, where thousands of contractors actually didn't get paid and federal employees lost their paychecks while they were delayed for weeks. And I know many people were actually in tremendous pain, and that was all over a wall. Remember that? And then a national emergency has been declared that doesn't exist at the southern border just so he could get funding for this wall that will never be built. So if a president can do all of that, what makes you think he won't do anything or everything within his power to shut down an investigation that will most likely lead him and perhaps several of his cronies out of power or worse, to jail?
I mean, true, he might do that. It's always a possibility. I'm kind of wondering if Schumer or Moore is here is preemptively baiting Trump into not doing that. Because there's not been a credible threat yet that he will do this. But,
or maybe he's warning American people and Republicans that this is what's going to happen. He puts it out there.
Or setting the narrative. But we do know that he does have advisors like Lindsey Graham who are strongly advising Trump to take the Clinton model of governing while being impeached. And for instance, Graham credits that with, there's a lot of reasons his effort failed back then. But Graham said one reason he thinks that he did not succeed in impeaching or having removed from office Bill Clinton is because this whole time he was getting things done, getting work done, getting the government going, getting bills passed.
It's not going to happen. It's Trump. It's never going to happen.
So Schumer knows his advisors arguing that, and this could be his way of saying, you know what? Prove us wrong. Don't go down this path. Let's at least keep the government functioning while we impeach you.
He won't. It's Trump. He can't. That's what I'm saying. It's not going to happen. It's Donald Trump. He's going to discombobulate, Susan. That's what's going to happen. It's going to be more self-destructive tweets, more insane policy. Let's not forget Syria. Yeah, that happened also. He's incapable of governing. He has, a few talking points, right? So it's going to be the wall. What else? What else does he have?
I mean, immigrants are criminals. He's definitely
That's it. That's all he got. He already passed the Muslim ban. He got his two Supreme Court justices. They're going to throw in a record number of justices under his tenure. The tax cuts are a failure. The trade war is destructive. The economy is not going to get better. More people are afraid of a recession. The debt has gone up. The deficit has gone up, right? Tell me what he's got.
He has the greatest economy of all time. He has the most successful presidency in the history of the world. according to him.
In addition to that, more and more deregulation, more and more destruction of the environment, rolling back all these environmental protection laws, Endangered Species Act, like more and more allies mocking us openly. It's gonna be, part of my language, a shit show. It's gonna get so much worse, and he's gonna get more desperate. And we've seen how he behaves when he gets desperate, which is dangerous for our democracy. And I just hope that Democrats realize what they're up against. And I've always tweeted this like every day. I still don't really believe that Democrats are prepared for how low he and like Jim Jordan and Gates are about to go. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, in closing, there's been a lot going on, obviously, in Syria, but...
I like that transition. That was wonderful. From terrible to worse.
Yeah. So 2 weeks ago, we talked about the Esperanto tweet where Trump said that Mark Esperanto, his DOD secretary, had made a statement about, we've got the oil, which he, Esper, his actual name, hadn't said. And then we've had more talk about the oil since then. And then over the weekend, Trump had an interview, quote, air quotes there. You can't see him, but I'm doing air quotes. An interview with Eric Bolling of Sinclair Media. And here's what Trump had to say.
Forget about fairness. I didn't do anything wrong. It's all about 100% about the conversation I had with the president of the Ukraine. And it was perfect.
Before we go any further, the Syrian situation, you know, I think it was brilliant what you did afterwards, where you said, we're going to protect the oil installation infrastructure. That's a lending
hand. Ourselves. And
that is such a smart move.
Ourselves. Why don't only you get courage, credit for the that? Courage in ourselves? Well, the Democrats will never give you credit. By the way, if you go back 2 or 3 years and somebody said they're bringing the soldiers back home, if somebody said that other than me, the Democrats would have said he's the greatest genius in history. But if I say it, they want to say, well, we want to stay and fight forever. No, we don't want to be involved on the border. The border between Turkey and Syria, they've been fighting for hundreds of years. They've been fighting for centuries.
Yeah, but that oil installation is the difference.
The oil.
You can fight about land, but yeah. The oil.
So I said, we're leaving there, but we've secured the oil. And we've got the oil.
I know you have to
and
make a speech
good.
Here before
I
go.
That's okay.
Washington Nationals, you're going to go to the World Series game.
What's very exciting. Yeah, I'm going Sunday.
Yeah, this goes back to something Trump has been wanting for a very long time. And seriously, it's maybe worth going back, listening to our first episode of 45th, way back at the beginning, where we cataloged in the first episode all the times Trump said that he was going to do just this, where he said again and again and again that he would be taking the oil from foreign countries where we have military people stationed. And at the time, I mean, he was so adamant about it, it seemed like a real threat, even though it wasn't being taken seriously. But then nothing happened for a while. Like, maybe he got convinced, he did get convinced away from it, he did get talked out of this for a time. Now it's clear he's going back to his first instincts. And in this interview, when Bolling was trying to suggest we are there, military presence would be there, Americans would stay in Syria to protect the Kurdish interest in the oil fields, Trump is adamant, no, we're not there to protect Kurds or their interest or to help them. I'm pulling all the men out of Syria, but I'm putting them back in to get that oil for ourselves, for the United States.
And armored vehicles, by the way. And now Russia controls that northern part with Turkey, which means there's potential for conflict with our troops. And also, we still need to rely upon the alliance of Kurdish soldiers who, let me just predict, probably won't be that forthcoming with valiant support and defense of U.S. troops that have abandoned them.
And also, this is a war crime. This is a war crime. You can't seize someone else's assets because you have military people there.
And people forget that if you go back in time and listen to the grievances of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, they were very open about it. One of their main recruitment and propaganda was that the U.S. is an imperial crusader force that is taking over our resources and is stationing troops in our land. And in particular, they were really pissed off about U.S. presence in Saudi Arabia. And as the United States has pulled out troops from northern Syria, guess where they've put more than 1,500 troops, Susan?
Well, where they're getting paid, which has still not been answered, but Saudi Arabia.
So this is a complete shit show across the board.
The United States military is a roving mercenary force that also seizes assets and annexes resources for its own good. That's exactly what patriotism in America is all about. So, on that optimistic note, that's all for this week of the 45th. come back next week, where we'll hopefully have something more less awful to talk about, but probably not.
We'll talk about puppies and kittens. I have neither, but I think Susan will bring her kitten.
I will get a puppy, just so I have something good to talk about.
Cat will be strong next week, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it for now. Bye, guys.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.